This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Ahsoka is the latest Star Wars TV series on Disney+. This one's about a character who's beloved by fans of the franchise's animated series, but if you only know the Star Wars movies, you're likely meeting her for the very first time. Rosario Dawson plays Ahsoka. She was once a Jedi before she rejected the Order's stuffy, bureaucratic ways. Sure, she seems all tough and stoic now, but she's harboring a great sense of guilt because she knows that her one-time Jedi mentor and closest friend eventually became Darth Vader. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Ahsoka on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
Joining me today is filmmaker, pop culture critic, and iHeartRadio producer Joelle Monique. Joelle, welcome back.
Hey, Glenn. Glad to be back.
Oh, Joelle, I have so many questions.
I have answers.
Let's get into it. Okay, so the long time ago and far, far away galaxy in which Ahsoka unfolds is a more morally gray place than it was in the Star Wars films. The series is set in the years after the events of Return of the Jedi, as the recently established New Republic strives to rid the galaxy of the last vestiges of the evil Empire. And it features many characters who've appeared in the Star Wars animated series The Clone Wars and Rebels, as well as the live-action series The Mandalorian. Chief among these is Ahsoka herself, played by Rosario Dawson. In the animated series, Ahsoka was young and idealistic, but seeing her beloved mentor Anakin turn to the dark side and destroy the Jedi Order has made her guarded and aloof. She reunites with her one-time Jedi mentee, or Padawan, Sabine Wren, played by Natasha Lou Bordizzo, but neither one of them is sure that continuing Sabine's training makes any sense now that the Jedi are extinct. They're all trying to find and stop a new threat to the galaxy and also find their friend Ezra Bridger, who's played here by Iman Asfandi. There's also, it should be noted, a lot of business with a space map and space witches and space whales. Ahsoka is streaming on Disney+, and a spoiler warning, if you are listening to this episode the day it drops, the Ahsoka finale airs tonight. Now, Joelle and I haven't seen it, but we're going to talk about the seven episodes that we have. Joelle, please help. What do you think of Ahsoka?
So first, I have to give your audience just a fair, honest statement about me and my relationship with Ahsoka. I have two tattoos. One of them is a witch. The other are Ahsoka's lightsaber hilts. I am obsessed with this character. I love her deeply. I am hypercritical of this show. I think there are many, many things to love. I love Rosario Dawson's performance as Ahsoka. I like getting to see a lot of Legends characters for folks outside the Star Wars fandom. Any books, comic books written prior to Disney's acquisition of Star Wars are considered Legends. But oh boy, some very typical things we have of these Star Wars live action shows. The pacing is unrelentingly slow for reasons I don't understand. There's so much story to be told here. Yeah. I question some of what we choose to show. Apparently, Ahsoka stops Sabine from going to Mandalore to save her family.
Your family died on Mandalore. because your master didn't trust you.
That's conflict, and I think it's the main thing missing from Ahsoka.
Oh,
we are lacking conflict between characters who love each other, conflict between characters who are against each other. Although it's a space opera, and what we're getting is really into the samurai aspect, which is fine. It's Ahsoka. She's a warrior. She's a lone samurai. But I think you can't miss the space opera element of it. You need high stakes. You need high emotions, and you need high conflict. You need that tension, and it's just so subtly played out throughout Ahsoka that I think it causes everything to feel sluggish and slow. And that being said, oh my gosh, they brought in Ezra and he's perfect. I mean, Iman Esfande is some of the best casting in this series.
Okay.
Crown him. He's so good as this character. And I think he turns over a lot of what has been struggling in the show, like that dichotomy of character. You can't have like four aloof, low energy characters to launch a series. I wish we had gotten them on a little bit earlier. And, you know, it's like all of the pieces are there. I'm just not loving how they're all assembled.
Okay. You are the perfect person to talk about this with me because I feel so much of what you're saying, even though I'm coming at it from the outside. I never watched the animated series. I have surfed a wiki in my time because it is 2023 and that's the law. And it's not a principled nerdy stance because, as you say, it's not that they're not canon because they very much are. When Lucas sold the franchise to Disney, everything goes away. Everything becomes legends, all the extended universe except for the movies and the animated series, which at that time was Clone Wars, but now it's Rebels. So they're very much in the mix. I have more or less come around to the series Ahsoka, but as you allude to, Joelle, in the early going for me, it was very rough. I'd be interested to see what breakdown of people who are sticking with this show, what percentage of them are like you and what percentage of them are like me.
Me too.
How many of them actually watch the animated series? Because coming from the outside, I get that Ahsoka feels guilty. I don't understand why, because it wasn't her fault, but okay, she feels guilty that, you know, the Darth Vader of it all, and I love Rosario Dawson, but here she's doing, at least in the early going, the first half of the series, she is doing stoic and badass, which comes off as just dour. She's kind of a bummer. She's kind of a pill.
She is, yeah.
And also this thing is loaded, front-loaded with callbacks for fans of the animated series, and Ahsoka's creator, Dave Filoni, is also behind those shows, and he has said he wants this to feel like another season of Star Wars Rebels. But he's also said that you don't need to have seen the animated series. Now, as someone who knows the animated series as well as you do, what do you make of that?
With so much love and respect to Dave Filoni, if it's going to be a continuation, then it requires prior reading. It requires you do the work before, and particularly if all of your recalls are going to be strictly in conversation. It's not helpful to only hear what's happened. We need to see it in action, which is why I really wanted to see what happened on Mandalore, why Ahsoka wouldn't let Sabine go. It's the crux of their breakup. It explains all of the frustration and angst and concern and questioning between the two of them. What happened?
Don't you ever get tired of moving from one place to another?
I go where I'm needed. Not always.
There's nowhere you can go to look at that, read about it. There's no prior knowledge other than it was said rather briefly. And so I think what Disney has to come to terms with is the fact that if you're going to continue to build out a Legends-style canon, which I think is great, I love it, then you have to be prepared to either bring people in a way that makes sense or acknowledge that, hey, this is just not going to be for everybody. We'll have a smaller audience overall because there is so much background that needs to be done to dive into these things.
You've already clarified something for me because, yes, a lot of what I didn't get happens in dialogue here. And those first few episodes, you're just neck deep in a big bowl of egg salad.
Yeah, no. And I think trying to serve two masters really messes everything up because as a super fan, I'm like, I know this. This is not new information to me. This is not giving me any new understanding of the characters. It's sluggish. I was like, I want to get into the world as it is right now.
Magic word sluggish. Several scenes early on, the first half of the season, just characters sharing long pauses, slow nods, enigmatic expressions. There is a point in the pilot, Joelle, where Sabine is on Ahsoka's ship and she's kind of, to my mind, she's lingering meaningfully over a wall panel. And I'm like, you're killing me here, man. What are you doing? What are you doing? You know that scene at the end of Return of the King where Frodo's in bed and every single member of the Fellowship gets
jumps into the bed? It's a classic scene.
Gets a chance to kind of walk in the doorway and get framed in the doorway, get a tight shot up of their face going, yes, it's me. Imagine that if you had not seen the three films leading up to it. That's kind of what it felt like to me again and again. I was growing real impatient with the series, but then we got to the Space Witches. I'm a basic gay man. I'm a sucker for a space witch. Give me
Love
a space witch.
Yes.
I am a sucker for the heavily memed image of Grand Admiral Thrawn's Star Destroyer, how to put this, settling itself upon the spire of the witch's temple.
One might call it docking. Yes.
Call it docking. I am 12. I love that. But I have a very basic question for you, which is,
yeah,
my understanding of the character of Ahsoka is that she rejected the ways of the Jedi. She's carving her own path. And when Rosario Dawson turned up on The Mandalorian briefly, that was the same vibe I got from her. She's doing her own thing. Mm-hmm. Here, it seems like she is back toeing the party line. It's Jedi, mm-hmm. Jedi, Jedi, all day, all way, Jedi for life, for L-Y-F-E. And she's going to get her a Padawan learner. She's going to restart this whole broken system. Is that out of character or am I missing something? Because whenever I think I'm missing something in the Star Wars franchise, I figure, oh, there's probably a comic that explains it. There's probably a video game, probably a bedsheet that I don't have that explains this all.
She leaves the Jedi Order because basically she's like, hey, the Senate is clearly up to something. Like, bad things are happening here. The vibes are not good. I have to go. Even my master is questioning it. He's just not prepared to leave and I can't wait for him. She leaves before he turns. It has nothing to do with Anakin. And so I think that her return to some of the Jedi principles is simply because that is all she knows. Mm-hmm. There is no family to go back to. There's no community. If you think about the life of a Jedi, you're basically abducted as a child. You are then raised in a temple with other Jedi until you become like 13. Then in Ahsoka's generation, then you became a general. You went straight into war. There is no other life outside of the Jedi that she knows. Even when she went to forge her own path, all she has are these, her training. And so she's constantly falling back on them.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm not following Jedi protocol here. Yeah. My Padawan doesn't need to be a Jedi. I wanted to pass on my knowledge of the Force.
Not everyone can handle the type of discipline it takes to master the ways of the Force.
So I think she straddles a line, but I think it's because there isn't much else there. If I can ask you a question, have you felt like this entire show is Ahsoka's show?
Yeah, I mean, again, because she's not giving much, right? She's giving stoicism. She's giving, like, from the evidence before me, I don't see why this is such a beloved character. I'll be honest.
And I think that's totally fair. And that's what's really been frustrating for me is I can't even recommend people go here. People are like, oh, well, what should I do? I'm like, well, go watch season 7 of Clone Wars where you really get into, like, who is this character when she's not a Jedi, when she's outside of that order, when she's completely by herself? She's got like that effortless cool where you instantly want to get to know her. She's quippy and funny and fast, none of which you get to see at the top of this series.
Right.
I love watching this character. I wish I had a show that was specifically hers.
So let's talk about that fifth episode. The fifth episode features the return of Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker. There's a conflict that Ahsoka has with Anakin that stretches the entire episode, whether it's because he's a Force ghost or it's the world between the worlds or it's a dream or Ahsoka's unconscious memories of Anakin. There is a kind of episode-long lightsaber battle between the two of them.
What's the lesson, Master?
Live. Or die.
I won't fight you.
And I kind of expected something more concrete to emerge from it because he challenges her to give up her passivity, her peacefulness, and fight. Because I think what we're supposed to take away from this is to fight is to live. Is that what we're supposed to – that she's decided to live? Was that an issue for her before? Passivity? What was that doing?
Okay, so it seems to me that most fans think, okay, this is Ahsoka's subconscious – trying to sort out her overall issues with Anakin, which is basically, I left and then you turned. And had I stayed, you might not have turned. I might have been the anchor that kept you sane. But I don't have to live in the past. I don't have to die there. I can evolve and grow and change. I think it's a perfectly fine reading of everything. To me, if we have Force ghosts and they are consciously sharing information, then when I see a Force ghost, I think that's the actual person, not a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's so much more about Anakin actually having a redemptive arc. From the original series, a big critique is always, how do you get a deathbed redemption after all of the horrible things you do, especially after we get the prequels where you're slaughtering children? Mm-hmm. And so for him to come back and say, hey, I know that my choices have made life rougher for you. Don't die here with me. Go out and live and be better. Which is great because I love Anakin and I love that Hayden Christensen gets a chance to be like, actually, I'm a pretty decent actor.
Yeah.
And to give a little justice to that character who's so integral to the entire franchise. But then again, it feels much less about Ahsoka, the character. In The Mandalorian, she refuses to train Grogu. She absolutely refuses. Yeah. And you get the sense that my master turned into Darth Vader and horrible, horrible things happen because he should have never been trained in the ways of the Force. I can't understand why she's training Sabine, or if something happens with Sabine that then leads her to be like, okay, you know what? No, my instincts are right. Absolutely no, we do not train them. Again, it's confusing. I like it because the performances are solid, but I don't know what the turn to this white Jedi is supposed to mean.
She's just a little happier. Like, she smiles more. That's pretty much how it manifests.
Yeah, she's back to her quippy self, which is nice, but...
The thing I liked most about those early episodes of the show was this show would go 30, 40 minutes before you're realizing, you know what? A man hasn't had a piece of dialogue yet.
Like, let's talk about the women! Oh my God.
They don't point at it, they don't underline it, but it's the Hera Sabine Ahsoka Mon Mothma show.
Yes, it is.
And it doesn't feel like a statement. It just feels like an attempted course correction. And I was here for that.
I really love it because all these characters have been around. These are all the positions they would have fulfilled anyway, stepped into. So it feels very natural. It doesn't feel forced. We're like, I guess we have to throw in some more women. We don't have any of the typical, like, cliche women conversations. I think watching women with lightsabers will always just be iconic to me. It took so long for us to get them and then for them to be taken seriously, because when Ahsoka first came out, people also really did not like her as a character. I mean, one of the highlights of this series is, like, there are so many women in so many powerful positions doing such cool things. I just feel like so much of these women, as cool as they are underwritten dialogue-wise and even action-wise. I don't know if you noticed, like, to me, a lot of times people just stop to talk at each other as opposed to, like, the way humans actually live, which is, like, let's be involved in the scene and in a moment, and I don't know, I'm folding clothes, I'm eating, I'm prepping my weapons, anything. They just stop. They're not doing anything except talking at each other. And there's, I hate to say it, but some of these, it just feels so lifeless. Again, conflict is extremely lacking. I understand that they have different ideas about what to do next, but not why they have those different ideas or how they disagree, or even if they need the other to agree.
Yeah, you ask yourself, but why a lot on this show? Because it took a while for the humor to kind of infiltrate. They had David Tennant's droid providing comic relief, thinking that was enough.
Not bad, but not good.
It's been a while.
Obviously.
It took a while for everybody to loosen up. And it surprised me that Sabine would be the character who helped kind of goose the humor in the show, because in those first couple episodes, man, she was not given anything.
Yeah. Sabine's introduction is so freaking cool. She's on that motorcycle. You have that cool song that is both punk and, like, sort of original to Star Wars, but fits in nicely. And then after that, you're like, now she's just kind of dour.
No, I get it. So one other thing I like, I do like Ahsoka's ship. I like the table that rises out of the floor, although...
Hygiene?
Looks cool. Hygiene, right? Can we talk about that for a second? That is their training floor. That is where they are sweating and their space boots are knocking all over the place. Nobody wipes a thing down. And they're eating off a gym mat is the thing, which it's the grossest thing.
When they set the teacups down, I was like, don't do it.
I was, what are you doing?
It's a great design. I'm sure the Swedish were like, yes, more modularization. We love it.
The space Swedes.
I guess I would just say that for as many issues as I have with the show, and clearly I have many, I'm still enjoying myself. I still get excited for the episodes, which is either a testament to my insane love of Star Wars, or the fact that there's always going to be something about getting a chance to see these characters in action. And I'm hoping for a solid ending. I mean,
we
have so much more. Glenn, don't kill it forever. I'm hoping for a solid landing, because we're going to be building out series and movies from this. And we'll see. I would say give this series a shot. read the books, get into, if you haven't watched the animated shows, there's stuff to be gained in there. Please love these characters as much as I do so they don't have to go away, is my plea to the audience.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for this because, man, I feel like you're Padawan learner. And it's a place where I love to be. We want to know what you think about Ahsoka. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Joelle Monique, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Glenn. This was lovely.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you have not yet signed up, want to show your support, and listen to the show without a single sponsor break, head over to plus.npr.org/happy hour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and Thomas Liu and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Holokamin provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.